With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Greetings, friends. It is I, D. Trussell, and you are listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast being recorded from the Commander Burke Mausoleum in Asheville, North Carolina. I just want to say thank you to Asheville Forever Cemetery for hosting the podcast for the next few episodes while I try to find a place to live where I can have an actual home office. And you know, I gotta admit, it's not that bad here in this mausoleum. And right now, if you're living in Asheville and looking for a great office space, go to Asheville Forever Cemeteries and use offer code FAMILYHOUR and you're gonna get 15% off an office space in one of the many available mausoleums.
In this mausoleum, I can finally be myself. I made friends with the spiders on the shelf. By the candles and the lanterns, the flick flickers late at night. I don't mind laying here while my bones turn all white. As long as I eat brains, I don't feel pain.
It won't be long until no one remembers who you are. 500, 600 years max. Can you think of anyone from 600 years ago that wasn't a president or an emperor or some shit? You will be forgotten. And even if you are some famous person, no one's gonna care. Do you care about many famous people from 500 years ago? Of course you don't. You will be forgotten. You will be forgotten. Cutting-edge technology that detects when you're taking yourself too seriously and sends an alert to your phone saying, you will be forgotten. No one will remember or care who you are. You will be forgotten. Hey friends, do you like books? Do you like being around people who like books? Then I wanted to invite you to subscribe to patreon.com/DTFH and sign up for our weekly DTFH book club. Shout out to my Dune book club fam. We have voted on a new book, and if you're feeling the fall blues, if you're somebody who maybe gets a little depressed when the light hangs low in the sky, if you're somebody who feels as though some darkness is inevitably going to devour you, then you should sign up for our next book, House of Leaves, which is like my Tuesdays with Maury meets the Blair Witch Project. It's a book by Mark Z. Danielewski, and just to paraphrase, I'll read a tiny passage from the very beginning of the book. With a little luck, you'll dismiss this book. Then, eventually, no matter where you are, in a crowded restaurant or on some desolate street, or even in the comforts of your own home, you'll watch yourself dismantle every assurance you ever lived by. And then, for better or for worse, you'll turn unable to resist, though try to resist, you still will, fighting with everything you've got not to face the thing you most dread. What is now, what will be, what has always come before, the creature you truly are, the creature we all are, buried in the nameless black of a name. And then the nightmares will begin. That's the very beginning of House of Leaves, voted on by the Dune Book Club. And we would love to invite you to come and join us. There's still time to order this book. It's available on Amazon or Kindle. Highly recommend the paperback copy. It's really beautiful, and because of the nature of the book, you kind of need the actual flop book instead of the e-copy of this book. You can sign up for the Patreon book club at patreon.com/DTFH. Why can't I see? A tremendous thank you to Squarespace for sponsoring this episode of the DTFH. Squarespace gives you everything you need to create a beautiful website. Whether you want to create a commerce-based website where maybe you sell your stinky pandemic socks online to people who want to smell the funk of your sweaty feet, or you just want to create a website for your restaurant or maybe a podcast, that you've decided to start. Squarespace gives you everything you need. And if you want to see a beautiful Squarespace website, go no further than DuncanTrussell.com, and your eyes will probably melt out of your head and your legs will turn into the stalks of beautiful flowers when you witness how glorious that website was. And it was made using Squarespace. They've got mix and match templates if you want to make a fast website, but you can go as deep as you want. It's all there for you at Squarespace. And also, if you're interested in actually creating the technology I mentioned earlier, then YouWillBeForgotten.com is still available, and you can grab that domain and try out Squarespace by heading over to squarespace.com/Duncan. You can give them a try, and when you're ready to launch, use offer code Duncan, and you'll get 10% off your first order of a website or a domain. Again, that's squarespace.com/Duncan. Use offer code Duncan, and you'll get 10% off your first order of a website or a domain. Thanks, Squarespace. My sweet future forgotten friends, we have got a beautiful episode of the DTFH for you. Logan Murto, one of the creators of Black Rock City. One of the most overlooked delights of Burning Man is a period known as the Build, which is the time before Burning Man officially starts, when people from all over the world gather together to help build Black Rock City, which for a little while becomes the most populated city in Nevada. I've been to the Build. I came there with my beautiful theme camp, the Enchanted Booty Forest, and one of my favorite memories of all time was digging trenches in the dirt of the desert to lay electrical wire so that my camp could have electricity for their DJ booth setup. It was like prison labor level work. You're covered with this acidic, sacred dust, but it was such a joy to do something out there that was hard, involved just physical labor, and the only payment was the joy of building something with a group of friends. It was really a high point in my life. And during that particular Burning Man, I was lucky enough to meet today's guest, Logan Murto. Logan Murto, aka Cobra Commander, is the DPW personnel manager at Burning Man. That might not sound very exciting, but what it means is that every year he comes to Burning Man 100 days early and manages 700 people in the middle of an alien desert who help create Black Rock City. He's a badass. And so now, everybody, please raise your hands and salute today's brilliant, philosophical angel of a guest, Logan Murto. Logan, welcome to the DTFH. This is badass, man. We talked about on the Playa doing a podcast, and it's been years since then, but I still remember how cool it was meeting you and like the kind of mystical significance you have out there on the Playa, because you are, it's not fair, I guess, to say that you have one of the hardest jobs out there, but holy shit, you're in charge of like somehow managing that whole, getting the whole city, Black Rock City, built, right?
It's true. I got a great team. I'm on a council of eight people, and between the eight of us, we run the Department of Public Works, and the Department of Public Works is about 800 people in total. And we spend anywhere from a couple of weeks to, you know, upwards of more than 100 days on the Playa, putting this thing together and making sure that everything's ready to go for opening night, you know. So, and then we stick around afterwards. Like, I'd still be out there until early October, helping everybody take it apart and managing the crew that is out there doing Playa restoration, along with, you know, the rest of the members of my council and all that. So,
can you, for people who are only familiar with Burning Man from like cheesy Instagram pictures that they've seen, which I think is like for some people giving them the complete wrong idea of what the festival is, but they might not even know what the playa means. Do you think you could describe those conditions to people? What's it like out there before any of that stuff goes up?
I'll do my best. It's like a 1,700 square mile alkali flat. It is like this powder, like baby powder thin dust that just stretches on into like the world's most infinite looking parking lot, surrounded by this bowl of mountains, which is just gorgeous and serene. And, you know, it is overwhelmingly beautiful. And then you spend a couple of hours out there and your body starts reminding you that it is also hostile and not friendly to life.
Right.
And it is a place where you have to stay hydrated, where you have to stay hyper vigilant about the sun, about exposure to the elements. It's the driest, most one of the most hostile places I've ever been in my life, for sure.
Yeah, I remember posting something about the sand of Burning Man on the Burning Man subreddit, and people being like, "That's not sand, that's alkali." But you think you could talk about what alkali actually is?
Oh, not well. It is that gets into a sciencey place that I'm not going to be able to hit you up. It is a fine, fine dust that gets into everything that you have, that gets in places you did not know you had, that will disrupt your electronics, that will corrode your vehicles. It is an intense substance, for sure.
If you've got your phone out, you can expect it to be dead by the time you get out of the desert. If you've got you can't bring modular synthesizers there. You can't bring any of that stuff because it'll eat it alive.
Well, you can, but you got to keep it wrapped in plastic, you know?
Right.
For the last couple of years, I've actually been getting a band, some people I know, a band called Spindrift out of LA, and I've been getting them to come out and play for the crew. And they bring all their equipment out, and then they're just like, I'm sure that they're home just wringing the dust out of it for days.
I mean, so. It's the most wild thing because it's got a certain smell to it too. What's that smell? You know, that alkali, like any of my stuff from the burn to this day, I get shivers when I pull out like the backpack that has the clothes I was wearing, because you smell that specific scent.
Sure. Yeah. And your body's got a sense memory to all of that. Right. And it's interesting because I've spent a tremendous amount of time up out there, like 100 days plus for, you know, a decade and a half every year. And so I think of that place as being largely scentless because it really does. It's so dry that nothing really carries out there to your scent in the normal way. But the playa itself, yeah, you smell it off the playa itself. You get out of there and you back in the real world and you smell that dust, and it is haunting and familiar, and your body just knows it. It's like nothing else.
But maybe you could talk about the temperatures out there, because I went in for the build with my camp. It was the best time I ever had working, but holy shit. Can you talk a little bit about just briefly, what is it exactly y'all are doing out there? What is required in setting up a city in the middle of this alien environment?
Absolutely. A tremendous amount is required. And, you know, there's a lot of teams that put a lot of work into putting Black Rock City together. And I want to acknowledge that right up front. What my team, the Department of Public Works, is responsible for is physical infrastructure for the most part, and then running a couple of services that kind of provide service to people in Black Rock City. But to sum it up, like, we're in there putting in the roads, we're in there building shade structures, we put our teams put together the Center Camp Cafe, we build the man and the man pavilion, all of the Arctica stations are physically constructed by us. So we're out there doing physical labor, we're out there doing physical construction. And that's not to mention the teams that are putting in the power grids, teams that are running our fuel department. There's so much going on there that is all kind of coming together, not only to support the crew during their extended stay out there, but also to support staff as they roll in to do their part to make Black Rock City happen.
Well, and also, what about to me, what was so striking, or everything striking about Burning Man, but one of the most striking things about it is how clean it is all the way through. That's the part where your mind gets blown when a few days in, when you realize if you have seen a cigarette on the ground,
you're picking it up. People yeah. just, you know, like people are, it's the cleanest festival. It's cleaner than my backyard for sure in Sherman Oaks with a toddler. It's clean. So what is that like trying to, you know, you've got gas out there, you've got flammable shit out there, all kinds of pollutants. What is it like working in a place where you, if you spill anything, you're looking at hours and hours of extra work?
You know, it's kind of crazy, but it's, you know, the Black Rock City is so clean because of the participants. You know, we of course on staff do everything we can to do to make that happen. But if it wasn't for the cultural buy-in, you know, if it wasn't for us asking everyone who attends to do their part, you know, we wouldn't have that. And so, you know, it's a massive group effort to make that the case. And I'm glad that that's your experience of it 100%. You know, to work in an environment like that, it just becomes part of the deal. You know, you don't cut wood unless you put a tarp down. You know, if you think you're going to be working with something, you're going to spill. If you think there's some danger of it, like just becoming a mess, you're thinking about that beforehand. You're planning for that, you know, as a part of the process. And it then that bleeds into the way that you do anything in life. You know, once you start actually thinking about leaving no trace, once you actually thinking about how can I make as little an impact on my environment as possible when I do what I want to do or what I need to do. You know, it just gets built into your psyche in terms of like how you approach a problem.
Man, I got to tell you, it lasted for me for about, and this is pretty good for me, about a year after that burn. I would, if I stayed in an Airbnb after my second, I would like clean the, you know, you don't have to, but you get in your head like, oh, I'm going to leave this place like nobody was here.
It's right, and why wouldn't you want to leave something better than you found it, you know? So I'm curious, what made that fade out after a year? What made that not the case anymore?
Man, you know, laziness. Like, you know, the world, you are getting, you, again, anything I say is clearly an excuse, but I think there is something about, and they talk, burners talk about this all the time, you hit default reality, and it is like you're entering into another dimension or something. You drop in to the world that you were born into, and you carry for with it like a, I don't know, like a comet or something. You've got a little Burning Man trail that lasts for, but it burns off in the atmosphere, man. It like, I still think about it, but it's a little bit of a foggy memory for me now. You know, it's a not foggy just because of the drugs, but foggy.
Because distance over time has made it. Yeah.
Distance over time. You know, that's been my experience with not just Burning Man, but spiritual retreats in general and sure. Psychedelics. It's one of the problems is maintaining the vibe.
You and I were talking about that a couple of days ago, I don't know if I would classify it as a problem. You know, it's that wobble. It's that forgetting and remembering. Like that is the process. It's breathing in and breathing out. The things that we want to hold on to, you know, and not trying to hold on to them desperately forever, but rather remembering how to recognize that you've dropped them and remembering how to pick them back up.
Oh, yeah, man. Thank you for thank you. Yeah, you're right. And that was the, you know, to me, that's the. Well, that's one of the great hopes that Burning Man has given me is, and I remember that was the first. That's when I was getting, well, the first one I went to when I got was getting really like kind of choked up is this sense of like, holy shit, this is a way human beings can be. This is a way human beings can be. And I've never seen this way that human beings can be before. And you see that and like, we don't have to be the way that we are. Like we're in our cities, we're, you know, hunkered down. A lot of us were, especially now, we're alienated from our community. You know, we don't. Everyone says, "Oh, go check on your neighbors," but come on, who really does that? Who really
not
does?
Not many people. Not
enough people. And then you go to this other place, which is an alien environment, where you shouldn't be able to even survive for a few hours, and it's heaven on earth for a second. And I remember getting choked up, and because that, I just kept thinking, like, my God, how crazy is it that we chose this other way? You know, the way we're doing it in default reality. But what do you think about that? I mean, what's the take among the people who are creating this incredible temporary city? Are they so utopian as I am about it, or is there a more realistic view of things?
I can't speak for, you know, I can only speak from my own perspective, you know, and my own take on it, but I'll do my best to, I mean, I feel like the reason I worked for Burning Man ultimately is because I wanted to work for something that I thought was improving the human experience. You know, my priority as a human is that I am doing everything I can to help my species evolve and to help myself grow and to help people around me grow and just learn how to be the best person I can be and to help others do that same. And not only for myself, but for my community and for the world and for the species at large. And so when I think about what we're accomplishing out there, you know, I never use the word utopian because I have seen plenty of people go out there and have a horrible time and right. never want to come back. You know, I've seen people on their worst day out there. I've seen people, I've known people out there that have died and have died out there. And that is, you know, utopia is loaded as a term and is loaded as a sure. concept. I don't go there with it, but at first glance, I think that Burning Man is that, you know, and Burning Man, because it provides this, this very digestible and comprehensible, or at least clear alternative to what you're used to. So no matter what culture you come from in the world, you show up at Burning Man, you're like, oh, this is clearly something different. And this is clearly something else. And yeah. something else isn't usually available. Like most cultures don't want you to really think about something else being available to you as a, mm-hmm. as a way of behaving. Right?
Right.
And so just by altering an alternative, you're already kind of shaking people up and you're already letting people kind of consider things differently. And when you take them to a place, or when they go to a place of that kind of permissiveness and that kind of acceptance, you know, they're able to do some of that work and they're able to look inside themselves and question things that they may not have questioned about themselves. And even if they come out of that experience with all the same answers that they went in with, at least they took a moment to look, and at least then they leave more affirmed with who they are, you know? I don't know if I personally feel like we're creating a utopia, but I know that we're offering people a chance to consider things and consider things maybe differently than they have before. And that goes from everything to like how they treat their garbage, how they treat their cigarette butts when they're walking around, to, you know, how they treat each other, to what they think is possible, to what they think they personally can accomplish with the time they have on the earth. And so just offering mm-hmm. that up as a space, as a perspective check, and as a permission to explore, to me, is one of the most important things.
Yeah. What about, what's your theory on work? You think you can talk about work a little bit?
I can talk about work. Hit me a little more specifically. What would you like to know about work?
Well, that was another of my favorite experiences as a human being, is coming in for the build and helping my camp, you know, like helping build the camp. And,
sure.
But realizing like this, we're all just doing this for love. Like we're doing this because we like hanging out with each other. We're doing this because people are going to enjoy what we're offering the playa. And suddenly the encumbrance of getting paid, if that makes any sense at all, or the encumbrance of hourly, working for something other than what most people are taught is the reason you work, was one of the most righteous, beautiful experiences that I've had. And all I could think is like, oh, is this like what this must be what people in tribes feel, or this must have been an indigenous, this must have been the experience of people before there was even such a thing as money, you know? And also the addition, and again, I don't know what the rules are for Burning Man, so I'm sorry if this is like saying something I'm not supposed to, but drinking, being a little high while you dig trenches and listening to music, you know what I mean? The way work suddenly becomes this celebration. It becomes its own joy, as opposed to like, well, I'm clocking in and I'm going to get away with just the bare minimum that I need to get away with, and I'm going to go home and get fucking hammered and go to sleep. You know what I'm saying? That's what I mean.
I do. I'd love to speak to that. First off, I would like to clear up the fact that my crew works sober. We have an OSHA-safe work environment. Like, we do not allow for any sort of substance abuse while people are working.
Of course. Right?
So that's a thing. And I think the perception of that is that we're partying all day and drinking all day and whatever. But no, we're not. We're operating heavy equipment. We're keeping each other safe.
Like, real quick, maybe it would be good to distinguish the difference between what you do and the individual camps.
Absolutely. And so my role with the DPW and with Burning Man primarily is the manager, the personnel manager for the Department of Public Works. And that means I'm recruiting and then ultimately overseeing the experience of almost everybody under almost everybody on the DPW. So it's about 800 people. And so for a great many of those people, I'm their introduction to the experience. I'm bringing them in. I'm kind of orienting them to the experience and checking on them throughout it so to make sure that they're getting out of it what they want to get out of it. And I have thought a lot about the relationship to labor that we have, and especially for the people that come out there. To do a stint with us is, you know, at minimum is a couple of weeks, but we get people out there for the long haul. And a lot of the people that can spend 3 months of their year going to build Burning Man is, you know, they're on the younger side. They're in a place in their life where they've got a lot more fluidity, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you have someone in their 20s who's going out there to spend their summer doing that, their relationship with work is still pretty, you know, it's still pretty raw, and it's what society has served up for them. You know, one of my favorite quotes, in fact, when someone's like, "Hey, what's your dream job?" You know, the answer being, "Well, I don't dream of labor," you know, because that notion of labor being something toxic, that labor is something inherently bad, is kind of fused into us because most of us grow up being bribed to do things we wouldn't normally do, so that we can, you know, first maybe get a little extra because we're living with our parents, but then just so we can survive, so that we can pay our rent, so that we can pay our bills. And so, you know, I don't know what the percentage is if you go into the world and we're able to poll and ask people, you know, if they're doing what they want to do for money, but I don't think everybody is, of course.
Right.
You know, a lot of people are doing what they need to do to get by or what they feel like they need to do to thrive. Out there, you know, you get someone who for the first time has the opportunity to work very hard and to put in a tremendous amount of effort to do something that they want to do and to give them an immediate reward of the fruits of their labor manifested, you know, just to for them to be able to go out there, bust ass, and at the end of it have Black Rock City as an end result, and to be able to look at them and be like, "Hey, you see this thing? You did that."
Yeah.
You know, that is, I know for me, that was unprecedented when I went out there for the first time in 1998 and worked on the labor crew. That was unprecedented for me to have Black Rock City as the reward for me just like working an insane amount and working harder than I'd ever worked in my life. And that in turn, you know, the experience of working in DPW for the first time and in the years that followed helped me redefine what labor is for myself. And I hope very much that it does that for anybody that comes across and gets to be on our crew. And I hope that it does anybody who just goes out there and busts ass for a theme camp, you know, because labor isn't about bribery and it shouldn't be about doing something you don't want to do so that you can get some shiny reward at the end. It should be about, you know, effort is directed towards what you love is the best thing you can do for yourself and for your life, you know? So if we're helping people remember that or recognize that for the first time, then that's fantastic. I don't just mean DPW. If Burning Man at large gives people an opportunity to go out there and be like, "Holy shit, I'm an accountant, but now I'm like hammering stakes into this circus tent and I feel better than I've ever felt in my life." There's a lesson there that they can pick up and take home with them if they want. You know, there's something there for them to remember and to internalize if they can, you know.
This episode of the DTFH has been sponsored by Feels. It's magical, delicious, Tolkien-esque CBD delivered right to your door. I have problems sleeping. I'm not ashamed to admit it. And I like to gulp down Feels because it helps me fall asleep. And it doesn't taste like a clown just barfed in my mouth. It's high quality tincture, CBD. It's like God wept onto the earth and we can stick out our tongues and catch the tears of the divine. It helps with inflammation. It's great if you are sore, if your back is going out. And for me, it puts me to bed as though I were laying on a cloud somewhere floating in heaven. Feels is fantastic. They've got real human support. So if you're new to CBD, Feels offers a free CBD hotline to help guide your personal experience. You can feel better naturally instead of taking whatever that crazy dissociative anesthetic you've been having your doctor inject into you on that island of yours out there in the middle of the Caribbean. You could just take CBD. Join the Feels community to get Feels delivered to your door every month. You'll save money on every order, and you can pause or cancel any time. Feels has me feeling my best every day, and it can help you too. Become a member today by going to feels.com/Duncan, and you'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping. That's FEALS.com/Duncan to become a member and get 50% automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. Feels.com/Duncan.
Would you call it subversive, that bit of wisdom that you get digging a trench, and you've applied your whole damn ego to something? You know what I mean? Like, your ego gets stuck in, like, oh, I'm a comedian and I blah blah blah, and then you're out there digging a trench to run cables so that there could be music, and you're happier than you've ever been, and you're digging a fucking trench. And it's, you know what I mean? Like, isn't that a little subversive if our whole system is based on this hierarchical centralization of duties?
Well, there's something subversive in there. I'm not sure if it's this part. I mean, I'm pretty upfront about it. It certainly will catch you by surprise, but I'm definitely upfront about the fact that labor towards what you love is what you should be doing in this life. And that said, you know, I will also tell you that if you'd come to me as a teenager and told me that the happiest times of my life would be, you know, picking up garbage and sunflower seeds and cigarette butts, you know, 2 weeks after Burning Man was over in the most hostile place on earth, exhausted, I would have been really offended and probably not believed a word you said.
Right.
And yet that is some of the best, that's been some of the best experiences of my life, because it is. It's, you know, they say labor of love and that sort of thing, but it's, you know, it's putting effort towards this thing that I deeply care about. It's putting effort towards this thing that I believe in my heart does people good. And, you know, that is required. And make no mistake, you know, I get paid. I have a job here.
Sure.
This is my career. And a lot of people in the DPW are paid, and there's a lot of volunteers work. So, that, you know, that we're not completely detached from the notion of, you know, commerce and of, you know, the reality that people have bills to pay in the real world and stuff like that. You know, we can't decouple from a civilization that we're embedded in and entrenched in. But at the same time, there are lessons there for us, you know, and those lessons, you know, you don't have to never get paid again for work to internalize the fact that, oh no, my effort towards something I love has this positive feedback loop for me that I should try to remember and that I should try to internalize and that I should cash in on every chance I get.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, and I think the other piece of the puzzle there is this is not happening in a vacuum. This is happening among other people who are also, you know, not just laboring for love, but also there's a sense of like initiation or something, testing, a sense of like the healthy forms of that, you know, a sense of like, hey, I want to prove to you, to y'all, that I will work hard for you because you're my friends and I want to make sure you know I love you, and so I'm working hard for you just so you see how much I respect you. You know, there's
absolutely
like that kind of primordial sort of like, not ego stuff, but just like, hey, how can I help you? Let me help you. Or like, you know, our camp leader, I remember, is I'm like, my ego is getting into it on the last day. So I'm like, I'm working too hard. It's blazingly hot. And I don't know why I'm deciding to be in a hurry, but I remember he like puts his hand on my shoulder. He's like, Duncan, we're all going to do this together. Why don't you rest for a little while? You're getting really hot. And it was the coolest thing because he knew what I was doing. He'd seen it before, you know, that other, and that,
sure,
that sort of like, I don't know, that sort of flow of communication that's happening with the game of work or labor happening. Whoa. It's so
totally
magical.
And that's human nature too. You know, you should always check yourself to make sure that you're getting out of something what you feel is fair compared to what you're putting in, you know, and you were doing that in that moment, right? You were tired and you were cranking. You probably hadn't had any water, and you're looking around being like, wait a minute, I'm supposed to be doing what?
Yeah.
My life isn't my life something radically different from this, but maybe not in that moment. Maybe in that moment you were just a guy who needed to move some heavy bins, and that's just what needed to happen, you know?
Yes, that's it. Right. Right. And that is
ego and its identity, right? And it's like, who am I in this moment that I'm picking up sunflower seeds from some camp that was like, yeah, it's just nuts. But in the who you are in that moment is the guy who sees the sunflower seeds and they need picking up.
Yeah. So. And that dissolve that in that moment, it dissolves your whole game. It dissolves your identity through work, through through labor. And I think that when, you know, opening up, I said cheesy Instagram Burning Man pictures. And what I meant by that is if you were to have never been to the burn and you just see the pictures of the cute girls with fire sticks or whatever, you might get this idea that it's pure hedonism. And,
sure.
And it would be easy to think that, but without realizing that actually that's a work colony there. That's a call. It's like a work, work camp, a labor camp.
I mean, it's a city, you know, Black Rock City is a city. Cities take effort. You know, there is so much effort that goes into things. And, you know, my role in it and my team's role in it, we just set the stage, the amount of work that comes into it once the doors open and once 80,000 people show up and do everything they do to make Black Rock City this incredible magic thing. Like, there's a tremendous amount of effort happening there. And, you know, and it's not the traditional job. It's not the traditional, you know, you're getting a paycheck for this for thousands and thousands of them. They're out there making art. They're out there creating. And they're out there specifically creating experiences for others and building outward for a community and trying to share and connect and explore with all that. I've been thinking about all of that a lot, especially with this year being what it is. You know, we're not in Black. We did get to build Black Rock City this year. The COVID has us all in a really different place. And I've spent this last week, which has been Burn Week traditionally for me, exploring the multiverse and exploring the virtual spaces that people created. I don't know if you got to do any of that. I meant to ask you that the other day. But, you know, I have been playing around in all of these spaces and you're seeing the exact same thing. What you're seeing there is people who have put in a ton of labor to build virtual environments or to build interactive systems for people that are just like browser based, right? You don't need a VR headset. You just go and click this clickable map and find your way into Twitch streams and Zoom rooms. And it's all just people. And it's a great reminder that, like, you know, everything from that to Black Rock City to just running into somebody on the street and taking a moment to connect with them, like, those are all just containers for what we want to do, which is connect with each other, which is, you know, share with each other. And the fact that we, you know, in lieu of Black Rock City, seeing so much effort going into, you know, we had 8 recognized universes of the multiverse, right? We had these 8 distinct different experiences that were available to people online, some of which still are, so that they could go and explore and connect and not lose some of that feeling of what Black Rock City is, which is a space to explore and connect and discover.
Yeah. You know?
And so that the feeling that is persistent, whether Black Rock City is happening or not, because this community is so committed to it as an ideal and as a concept, is so inspiring to me. It's really incredible.
That's
Did you get to play around with that at all, man?
You know, this is where I'm like, I think this is where I'm a little bit of a weakling in the sense that I saw the virtual Burning Man stuff. I'm like, I just can't do it. I can't do it. It's just, I don't... And, you know, maybe it's just because I saw one quick video of like a sim DJ waving his hands in front of digitized people. And I just thought, oh, no. I it was a moment of weakness, you know, because I was reading some stuff about it that was actually saying that it was one of the most in alt space. This is like a VR journalist. And he was saying it was like one of the most impressive feats of VR that he's ever seen. So now I kind of regret not popping in there, but I just felt, it's so selfish and dumb of me, man. But this year I was going to go back. It was the multiverse, which is one of my favorite concepts. I'm like, oh yeah. My wife was like, go this year to the burn. We just had a baby. I was like, this is going to be fuck. Really? Really, you want me to go to the Sims burn? I can't do it, man.
That is funny, man, and I don't want to call you out, but I mean, the theme was multiverse, and given one alternative to Black Rock City, you passed.
I know.
You didn't do it. Here's an alternate version of something I love. No thanks. I don't think so. Not today.
I know, man. It's such a
And we were like, how about 8 different versions of that?
No.
And we were like, nah, I'm good.
I like the multiverse, but I want to be in this universe. Damn it.
That's great. I'll tell you, I don't know if you were more skeptical than me. I was pretty skeptical. This would have been 23 years in a row on Playa for me.
Wow. Right?
I've been doing this forever. And, you know, there are people that I work with that have been doing it longer, but I've been doing it for a good stretch. And the idea of it also, for some context, you know, I play video games. I spend a lot of time in virtual environments. I love exploring games because of what they represent in terms of like experiences someone's trying to get me to have, or connections that people are trying to get me to explore. And so I love virtual environments for what they offer. And so I was already kind of like halfway on board with the idea. And yet I was like, Burning Man's not going to translate to that, and was just like not into it. But I have been working on the Burning Man Live podcast, as you know, and I got to interview a couple of people that had put together some multiverse, some of the universes in the multiverse, and their enthusiasm for the projects that they were building totally won me over and got me to go and actually bought an Oculus Quest headset. I went and got myself into BRC VR and looked around and had a really good time doing it. I was running around with and just like exploring just the art and the people I made. And of course it's not Black Rock City, and of course it's not, you know, what I'm used to doing with this time, but it was really fascinating. And then you know, that was BRC VR. After that I went and spent a lot of time in a thing called the Sparkleverse. And the Sparkleverse was this map that sort of functioned like a what, where, when. It was like a map of Black Rock City with all these clickable camps on it. And you would click through on these spaces, and sometimes there would be people in there and you'd suddenly find yourself in a Zoom room with people. Wow. Sometimes you would just click through and it would be a YouTube video that someone put together about some galactic shrimp trying to find love. And like there was all of just this weirdness that was accessible to me.
Yeah.
And I explored that for a couple of nights, and then that's ended up being where I wanted to spend my burn night. And so I spent my burn night. I watched the man burn on through burningman.org and watched it live. And then we went straight to the Sparkleverse. And we were just in this room where someone was DJing and being ridiculous. And we had maybe 100 people in this one Zoom call, all of them just sharing the camera, all of them just dancing and in costume and celebrating that connectivity, celebrating the moment and just reveling. And that was as close to an experience as Black Rock City has brought me. You know, that's as close to something as I was going to get without being able to go even to a club because of COVID, without being able to go into the world and see my friends. Like, I was able to sit here in my room and connect with people all over the world. And that was fantastic.
Yeah. You know, I am 100% wrong. I feel like a matter snob, right? That's what I think is, as VR becomes increasingly realistic, as, you know, Musk's neural mesh becomes more.
Yeah. The Neuralink.
Yeah.
That's exciting,
you know,
and weird.
Yeah. Very exciting. And, yeah, then we're, you know, there are going to be like people who are considered like matterlings or something. It'll be looked down upon. It's like, oh, really? You need to actually be in stuff for it to be real? Okay, you brute. But you know,
Who likes concepts, right? Who likes using their imagination?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. They're like, oh, really? You want that? You want density, I guess, is what you're looking for. Weight. Is that what you're looking for? Weight. You want to be stuck in a gravity well? Fine. But that's where I'm at right now. Interestingly enough, there is a parallel to the conceptualization of beings in alternate dimensions, you know, in the God realms in Buddhism or Hinduism or even angelic beings. They're lighter than us. They're not stuck in matter. They're not entrenched in this goop as much as we are. And like, I think that's what virtual reality is, an example of us sort of technologically lifting ourselves a little out, transcending matter. You know, I mean, we are
absolutely
stuck
in
that's
why so many people refer to that and refer to like hallucinogenic experiences as the, you know, they're only comparable kind of touchstone for that is the dream space, right? Where you're not bound to matter, where you're, where it's just your consciousness and an endless field of what your mind wants to produce and reflect upon. And so, yeah, I'm fascinated by what virtual spaces have to offer and what we are going to be able to discover the more that ramps up and the more we're dipping ourselves into that. Especially, you know, virtual reality is one thing, and I've watched it and its limitations shift and grow over time. Augmented reality is going to change the whole landscape too. You know, the moment that I can have an overlay and make any room I go into look the way I want to, make, you know, every experience filled with data that I'd like out of that experience, you know, that's going to change the game too. And so we're on a cusp, and you know, we're perpetually on a cusp, but we're on a cusp of something really incredible with what that is going to unlock in terms of the way that we all experience reality, all of us that choose to engage with it in that way.
This is what I love about Burning Man, is that it gives you a chance to go into this bubble and not be whatever the thing was that you walked in there as. And very quickly it lets you become unencumbered by the whatever the moral, ethical, whatever your own like hangups. It was like 2 days and I was wearing my friend's blouse. And I remember thinking, God, this is perfect. This is perfect for the desert. I mean, why have I been wearing jeans? This is not fair. This is not fair. Like, you know what I mean? We've been scammed as men that we don't get to wear this. This is so comfortable. But I look back on that level of freedom. And, you know, now we see, like, it's one of the craziest things when you see how triggered straight dudes are about trans people. It's the weirdest thing. It's like, you know, you don't run into, how often are you even running into trans people? I'm talking about, like, you hear these, like, dudes who are just doing rants about how unhappy they are about whatever the particular trans rights situation is. I find it to be flabbergasted by it, whatever the fucking word is. I'm confused by it. But I think what we're looking at there is the very beginning of an earthquake of like true identity tyranny. Because what you're talking about and what augmented reality is going to offer us, and not just augmented reality, but I think probably as CRISPR technology gets better, we are looking at a time where we do not have to adhere to the form we were born into anymore. Not just gender, but ethnicity, everything, size, everything. It's going to become more and more malleable, either through some digital overlay or even at some atomic reconfiguration. And I think that's one of the cool things about Burning Man, is it produces a place where you can play around with identity itself and how fucking just manacled we are to ourselves.
And that's why, you know, when I talk about this stuff, I tend to talk about Burning Man being a place of exploration and acceptance, because those things, while not being a part of our principles directly, are kind of woven into the culture in this big way for the individual experience, in my opinion and from my perspective. And you're absolutely right about that earthquake coming in culture. That earthquake's already happening, in my opinion, and started when the internet was able to connect us all. Right. And I remember being in the group of extremely naive and optimistic people that was like, yeah, we'll just connect to each other and it'll be incredible, because that'll allow some isolated weirdo that thinks that they're just the strangest thing on earth to understand that there are not only dozens, if not hundreds of people just like him, but probably also a magazine dedicated to whatever his weird things are. Yeah. And it's going to allow us to not feel so alone, because we're going to be able to stare at the vastness of humanity, everyone who can connect, and we're going to be able to recognize each other in each other. But what I underestimated vastly was how xenophobic and how hard baked into culture the preservation of the normal, or whatever normal is, from an individual's perspective is. And so seeing how many people looked into that vastness of humanity and could not handle what they saw, or just rejected what they saw, or were terrified, or were filled with hatred, I was not expecting that at all. And I recognize my own optimism in that. I recognize exactly where my failing was, and it was because I was in this my own bubble of being very technocentric and being very interested in watching us connect and evolve as a species. A lot of people are not thinking about that, and what they're thinking about is their own identity. And when they see something that is not comfortable to them, they see their whole way of life threatened. And in some cases, you know, they're correct, because there are disruptors, you know, and there are things, not necessarily negative, but there are things out there that are going to disrupt your worldview. There are things out there that are going to make it so that your sense of what the world is can't remain the same because you've seen these things. But that's a positive thing, man.
tremendous thank you to Shudder for sponsoring this episode of the DTFH. Shudder has an expertly curated collection of some of the best horror movies you have ever seen. They've got exclusives like My Favorite Host, which is this incredible horror movie that's a Shudder exclusive that was shot using Zoom. And it, maybe it doesn't sound scary, but it freaked me out. It's incredible. They also have premieres like Nick Cage's Color Out of Space, that's based on the H.P. Lovecraft story of the same name. And they've got an amazing series based on Stephen King's Creepshow called Creepshow. And you've got to check out the episode that my pal Rob Schraub directed. It's so good. Get started streaming the best horror, thriller, and supernatural content. You can try Shudder for free for 30 days by going to Shudder.com. That's Shudder.com and use promo code Duncan. Again, you can try Shudder for free for 30 days by going to Shudder.com and using promo code Duncan. And definitely watch Host. It is so good. Thanks, Shudder.
If your identity is a matter fascist, like if that's like based on what, where, like, because think how much work people have put into, like, you know, being muscular, you know, sure. Think how much work somebody puts into getting abs. And if anything comes out that gets you insta abs, insta ripped, any kind of genetic technology, that is going to be so scorned by muscular people who spent their whole damn lives getting biceps. Now all of a sudden everybody's ripped. What?
Right.
This is not fair. You can't just do that. You
sure they are going to be scorned, and then that scorn is going to completely get crushed under the Gattaca-like wave of suddenly everybody having what they want in terms of physicality.
Yes.
And then suddenly there's going to be this entire class system of people who have augmented and are now stronger, faster, smarter, and more capable, and a bunch of people that are purists for whatever reason they choose to be, that are getting outranked and outclassed and outmatched by people who have chosen to level up. Yeah. And, you know, I'm not saying that's any utopian scenario either. There's going to be disaster inherent at every turn on that path. But that is going to happen, because that's almost what almost always happens when something new comes along, right? You have people who reject it. And then if that thing is really something designed to, or, you know, by proxy, embetters people, if that's something that is going to help people have better lives, then the people that reject it get left behind. And
yeah.
That's just how it's always going to play. You know, that is the nature of evolution. That's the nature of growth.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't grow, you get crushed under the wheel, you know?
That's right. And do you think that's why, you know, one of my favorite things to read every year when Burning Man happens is the Drudge Report. Because it's a matter of time before an article pops up on the Drudge Report about Burning Man being like a satanic, hedonistic, pagan festival. Some people have even on Twitter, you know, I remember someone sending me this sinister tweet saying, congratulations for participating in a human sacrifice ritual. And they meant it. And they were really like, you know, disturbed by Burning Man. People are disturbed by it. They do see it as a threat to Protestant fundamentalist concepts. And I mean, not just like, you know, basic like homophobic people, but just all matter of people who want things to stay the way they are. They see Burning Man as being a failure. They see Burning Man as being a mark of the beginning of a forest fire of occultism, Satanism, sex, drugs, like,
sure,
yeah. And so do you think this is why y'all have been hitting so many roadblocks recently when it comes to the festival proceeding? It seems like every year they're making it a little bit more difficult for it to happen.
I think there are a number of reasons for that. I don't necessarily think that they're bound to the sort of core tenets of the philosophy of the thing. I would not say that the things that make it difficult for us to throw Burning Man and the challenges that we face on the regular are from they're coming from a mindset where people think that we're an existential threat to them. I think that that narrative of that Burning Man is this, you know, is this thing that is going to upset the fabric of society or reality. And you know, that's been around since, I think there was like a 700 Club episode on us for, you know, forever ago. And that narrative has always been there, but, you know, but we're just one target in, you know, a long string of things that we're going to end the world or upset society. Because if your worldview is based around the idea that what we do is right and what everyone else does that's different not only is wrong but can't exist and can't be tolerated, you're going to run into constant opposition and you're going to constantly be threatened and challenged by anything else in the world. And so I just see us being on that list of things that have come along and that people are threatened by because they are afraid that, you know, that we're going to upset reality or society, or that their children are going to run off and, you know, join whatever we're doing. And I'm not saying that there aren't people out there who don't think that we're some sort of cult, but, you know, I can't speak to that worldview because I don't sit in it. You know, I know why I do what I do. And I know what Burning Man does is really positive for people. And I see that happening again and again.
Yeah.
Not for everyone. You know, nothing is inherently positive for every person. And I've definitely, like I said earlier, seen people go out there and have awful experiences. But, you know, ultimately, you know, if our existence is threatening, I don't think we're the problem.
Wow. Yeah. Well said. Is sugar threatening to a glass of water? You know, no, it's just going to make it sweeter. But,
sure.
You know, there is I have felt when I've been out there, oh, shit, this is one of the things. Like, you know, they synthesize LSD. Hoffman synthesizes LSD. This simple chemical react, well, not simple. It's actually very difficult to make based on my, like, late night examination on YouTube. When you're like, maybe I'll make some LSD. No, I won't. I don't know what those tubes are. What the fuck is that thing? Where do you get that? but you know, if you think about that chemical reaction takes place at Sandoz Laboratories and you look at what that chemical reaction then did to the brain chemistry of our entire species and continues to do, and all the subsequent artistic creations that came from it and all the bad trips that came from it and all the rough things you hear about it. But if you consider that one initial synthesis and the ingestion of the chemical created a neurological wildfire that swept through humanity and completely shifted our consciousness, this is what I'm talking about when I think in terms of like, I think threat is probably the wrong word. We're talking about like things that have the potential of a sort of conversion, a cultural conversion or something, you know?
Sure.
What
and that is an ontological threat for some people, you know,
right.
Like the idea that conversion will shake up their belief system. And I get that, but you know, change is, you know, is inherent to life. Change is a part of existence and how you react to change, how you react to growth, how you react to the things in the world that are different. Like that speaks to not only your character, but the character of the worldview that you have.
Man, you are the perfect leader for getting people out there organized to work. Cause I would have, I bet you, I would have a million meltdowns, man. I don't know. Well,
we're going to find out when you come do DPW, you know, you're going to come do a couple of weeks on my crew,
yeah!
And you're going to understand it from a visceral level. And you're going to be able to speak to it in a different way because you're going to see it from the inside and it's not going to kill you. And it's not going to break you like you're thinking right now. It's gonna change the way that you see the whole affair. So just you wait, man. You're gonna do fine. And thank you for saying so. You know, I try to lead from a perspective of, you know, I started off in DPW as a volunteer. I started off just like doing whatever jobs there were, and then I was on a couple of specific crews as a volunteer. So I didn't get hired on to just manage a bunch of people.
Yeah.
I came up from the volunteer ranks because I believe in this thing and because that I've been a part of it for as long as I have. And
well, so, you're also a legend out there. I don't mean to flatter you, friend, but you're kind of you are a legend. I mean, like, and I'm sorry if this like people working in the org or whatever, like, come on, man. Don't do that to him. But you kind of are. You know what? There is, you, like, I remember when I met you, there was like a lot of like, you know who that is? And you probably are aware of that, right?
That's really kind of you to say. One of the functions of my job is that every morning at 7:30 sharp, I stand on a podium and I deliver a morning meeting. I host a morning meeting, but really what I'm up there doing is orating and kind of rallying the crew to get everything done, right? And it's everybody comes down to our place, our depot, where we kind of stage out for the morning. And I shout, "Good morning, DPW," to hundreds of people. And then I just start talking and I tell them about what's on the docket for the day. And they all know their jobs. They know what they're doing. They don't need me to do that. But I'm there just kind of giving them the lay of the land. And I'm telling them how the day is going to be. And what I have found in doing that for more than a decade is that when you are the person on stage in the morning, people start to associate you with the thing. Very strong.
Yes.
And so for a lot of people, you know, I am the voice of the organization. For a lot of people, I'm the voice of DPW because that's the role that I've been able to play here. And so, yeah, I get recognized for that and for the role I play with DPW very specifically, pretty regularly. And it's very flattering to be associated with something so amazing that I really, truly do believe in. And to be able to represent the hard work of so many people who I love and respect. It's a true honor to be able to represent that.
May I ask now? Definitely say no if you can't. We've got about, let's see here, 8 more minutes, something like that.
Oh man, I could talk to you all day.
Okay,
what a shame.
Beautiful. But I wonder if I could get you to give a good morning DPW to the planet right now, as though you.
Oh man. I don't know if I could, and here's why. It's because I have my speaking voice that you hear right now, and then I have this growling shout of, that's my orating voice, and I don't know if I could do a growling shout in my room without, like, I don't know how that's going to play. Plus, I'm not in the dust, I'm not in
character.
You gotta
be there.
So
you have to be, you become a reflector of the group. I get it. Look, you're a matter snob. See, you gotta be in the, we still are in matter. I understand, man. Can you speak a little bit though to the, you know, another thing I took away from Burning Man is a real sense of the dangers of centralization, the dangers of charismatic leaders. Maybe this is different in different camps, but what I loved about my camp is that obviously someone's got to facilitate and organize and be in charge. Like, you can't just, it's not going to happen like a coral reef or some bullshit like that. Someone's got to be like, put a tarp under the generator, or you got to get that fixed. But can you talk a little bit about like dealing with simultaneously being a leader, but in a society that seems to promote, I don't want to say leaderlessness, but definitely the idea is it's more of a team than a.
Sure. And if you want to meet a group of people who are not interested in being led or in authority, I can't wait for you to meet the rest of the DPW because managing people who have less than zero interest being managed has been a fantastic and fascinating journey. Honestly, I come to it from a place of, I have a tremendous amount of personal disdain for authority. And so being in authority myself, you know, I get it. When I see some kid that's like, who the fuck are you trying to tell me what to do? I'm like, well, that's a fair point, man. and honestly, I'm the person who is responsible for trying to get you to do the thing. And it's going to help us both have a good experience if you do. And if you don't, I get it. But also you're going to have to go, you know? So it's like, I don't resent anybody who's not interested in leadership. And I can't, or who's not interested in being led, I should say, who's not interested in being managed, who's not interested in just falling under the mechanisms of authority. But, you know, and anarchy, you know, I don't want to speak to it in a critical way. Anarchy is a philosophical concept, is something that's incredible because self-determination is incredible. But at the end of the day, you know, if you want to get complex things done on a large scale, some sort of organization is necessary, and hierarchical organization is something that we are familiar with and used to, and that we understand internally at a base reptile brain level or tribal level, you know, wherever you want to place that in our evolutionary history. And so it is easy to apply hierarchical leadership to things and have everyone just get it. And if you want to accomplish things that are complex, if you want to accomplish things that are large over time, you know, you do need some sort of structure, and this structure works. And I've had that conversation with people many times too, when they're just like, I thought this was just like a you get to just have feel however you want and do what, and it's like, no, this is a job. It's not just an adventure. It's a job. And and this is a thing that needs doing, because you're a piece of the puzzle here. And then this other department is an intrinsic piece of the puzzle here. And all of these things have to come together in order for us to do this amazing large scale thing.
Yeah.
And so it's easy in my experience to get people to buy into that once they understand that. And again, this ties back to what we were talking about earlier with them, their whole relationship with labor, and my whole relationship with labor when I was young, being tied to being bribed to do stuff I don't want to do, you know. And that's where part of the disdain for authority comes from, is because authority in most of our lives has come along to us and made us do a bunch of stuff that we weren't interested in doing.
Right.
Or punished us for doing what we wanted to do in the first place.
Right.
And so, you know, to help people contextualize it in a different way and start to internalize it in a different way and understand that structure can be used for good or can be used for something that they want to see accomplished, and that is, it is there to help them understand how they can be a part of it most effectively. You know, I feel like that's really valid and something that I encounter really regularly.
Wow. That's, thank you for that. That's a very, it's nice to hear that. I feel the same. I mean, like, as much as I love the, well, I can't say I even understand anarchism, but from what I've read, it's a beautiful humanist. It's an idea that we're all, humans are amazing. Humans are amazing. We tend to do good things together. But yeah, it's like there's a saying that emerged, I believe, from before Ram Dass became Ram Dass, when he's Richard Alpert hanging out with Tim Leary. There's a story of someone going up to Millbrook, that incredible mansion where they're all tripping out at. I think it was there. They're all doing acid. They were like painting weird shit on the side of the mansion, and like Tim Leary's riding a horse around and stuff. And they were like, you know what I mean? Drinking vials of LSD. But there's a story of someone going in there after, like, you know, I guess it'd been some time that they'd been sort of, they really were trying to, they were scientists who were sort of trying to push it to the furthest boundary they could, you know, and sure, it's a beautiful thing they were doing. But I remember the story is someone went in there and like the dishes, no one had been doing the dishes. And it was like the flies in the kitchen and piles of food everywhere. And that's where the saying, someone's got to do the dishes, came from, which is somebody's got to do the damn dishes while all y'all are like melting your DNA and traveling back in time to your protoplasmic identity. Somebody's got to get you some food. Someone's got to cook for you. And that to me is the one of the, I keep saying things I love about Burning. That's another cool thing about it, is those roles switch. Do you know, it's like it's a place where, yeah, sometimes you could be traveling backwards in time to check out your protoplasmic identity, but sometimes, look, it's your turn to fucking do the dishes, man. You don't get to travel back in time right now and be a protoplasm, because everyone else has been doing dishes for you or cooking for you.
That's exactly it, man. Yeah. That's exactly it. And that's when I talk about the baggage of utopia as a term, you know, it's like, it's like I always picture all these, you know, philosophers dreaming of some world where they don't have to chop wood and carry water, but chopping wood and carry water is the thing. You do it before enlightenment, you do it after enlightenment. Yeah. It is the thing. It's the work that you have to do to get by in this life. And yeah, you look at any communal living situation, and they're, I feel, constantly in danger of that if they don't have structure in place of, you know, everyone suddenly opting out of the thing.
Yeah.
Because the work has to be done, right? That's the nature of the reality that we're in, is that there's work that has to get done.
Yeah.
And if you don't commit yourself to contributing to the work, you're never going to find yourself in a happy situation. And if you try to design a system where no one has to do the work, you are going to find failure again and again, because that work has to get done.
And in the system where no one has to do work, which I, you know, honestly, I think that is one of the things we can look forward to, unfortunately, is full automation. I would say there is a real possibility of full automation. I'm not saying in, you know, our lifetimes probably, but who the fuck knows? But at some point, you know, swarms of nanobots that can make themselves into any tool and listen to you like your Alexa, you know,
sure,
you know, and then at that point, that's where things get really interesting, because so much of our identity is attached to work, and to not just work, but the heroics of work. You know, how wonderful is it when somebody gets up and washes the dishes when you don't want to? You know, they feel good. You're happy. So much of like how we express love is through work. Would it would fall.
You hear those arguments come up a lot, especially in these last few years around things like universal basic income, right?
Yes.
If you take away people's labor, you take away their identity, and I do think that that is true for a minute, but the scary part of that is that to society as it stands at the moment is that that won't last. People will find out what else they like doing besides identifying as, an electrician or whatever right. it is that they have done. Not to say, that any profession that you choose can't be wonderful and fulfilling. But if you take away people's ability to identify as what they have identified now, I truly believe what they have identified as now, I truly believe that they will find the next thing and they will find their identity in other pursuits. And I hope that those other pursuits are things that they are passionate about rather than the things that they found themselves skilled at enough to get by or that they had access to and fell into but were never thrilled by,
Yeah.
And there will always be people that love doing things, whether money's involved or not. And I believe that we all have those things in us. And, I don't see an absence of those things in people. I see an absence of the luxury of exploring themselves to find out what those things are.
Do you worry though that with Burning Man itself, do you ever, I'm just going to ask it straight out.
Do it, man.
Do you think it'll go on forever?
Nothing lasts forever, Duncan. I mean, it's not even happening now, man. but that's Black Rock City, right? So when you say Burning Man, I know you mean Black Rock City.
Yeah.
But Burning Man's not just Black Rock City. Burning Man is you and me meeting 4 years ago and then making time to talk over the internet, right now and spend an hour together connecting with each other and sharing ideas. Like, all of that stuff, like I said earlier, that's just a container for what humans want to do. And that's grow and learn and connect. And that's me being an optimist. That's me being who I am and bringing my perspective to the table. You ask the next person sitting next to me at work what Burning Man is, you'll get an entirely different take.
Yeah, I know, right. And I'm glad that you keep saying that over and over, because that's another beautiful thing about it is everyone has a different conceptualization of this beautiful event that happens once a year. And for me though, you really do embody it, what the utopian qualities of it. And it really is a thrill to get to chat with you. And I really appreciate your time, man, because you have made my day, and your invite to come work for a couple of weeks out there has made my year. And I will take you up on that.
You're gonna love it.
You're gonna have to talk to my wife. I will take you up on it. If I can go, I got another son on the way, but I would love it, love it, love it. Thank you, brother, so much.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for taking some time today. It was really great talking to you.
And where can people find you?
Oh, I'm Logan Mirto on Twitter. I'm Logan Mirto on Instagram. Sometimes I get to post some things that are a little behind the scenes during the build. If you want to see Burning Man before it's up and running, I usually get a couple of good shots during the pre-build when we're out there building Black Rock City. So
cool.
You can find me there for now.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, my friend. I really appreciate your time.
Absolutely, man. Take care of yourself.
A tremendous thank you to Logan Mirto for joining this episode of the DTFH, and also thank you to all our sponsors. If you forgot the offer codes, just go to DuncanTrussell.com, and thank you for listening to the DTFH. And now, for those of you feeling a little gloomy about the current world situation, I'd like to leave you with a beautiful song. Found it online. It's created by Jason Danny Yellow. He was kind enough to give me permission to play it on the DTFH. It features the color Fred on guitar and vocal harmonies, and it's on the label Organic Vinyl. You can find it at Bandcamp. The link is going to be at DuncanTrussell.com, along with all the links you need to find Jason Danny Yellow. Here's Darkest of Days.
You're in front of the fire, dreaming of everything you want to be. Your heart's out of control, knowing that you won't believe what you see. These are the darkest of days. It changes you under your skin. You see the air in your ways. It's only a moment of fear. The moment is gone. path that is worn, ridden by thousands of unequal men. The attacks and the scorn leave them to die in the field without kin. These are the darkest of days. It changes you under your feet. You see the air in your ways. It's only a moment of fear. The moment is gone, you're still. To you, we're all skin and we're bones, waiting to cycle back into the ooze. These are the darkest of days. It changes from hour to hour. I see the heart in your gaze. It's only
step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.